Hey, everybody. It's your girl, Jessie Mae. This is the Sharp Tongue Podcast, and I'm your girl, Jessie Mae. It has been such a brutal couple weeks, and I will get into the trials and tribulations of what happened to me with the scam. I got scammed on Facebook. I got scammed by my movers. I had so many things happen in a 72-hour period that I contemplated doing crack cocaine. And I haven't ruled it out. But that's neither here nor there. This is a very special episode. It's a combination of Dr. Peluso and grief. We're going to consider it a Dr. Peluso episode, but we do discuss some grief in it. So trigger warning, we have an amazing guest who is an actual doctor. And with these Dr. P episodes that we do, I am going to be interviewing actual doctors to give you guys real doctor advice, not just actually pretty useful. What is it? Actually pretty helpful? Dr. Peluso is actually pretty helpful, and real doctors are actually really doctors. So that's what this episode is. A special combo episode of a little bit of grief support, but more importantly, some real doctor advice. Not that mine doesn't help. I'm actually pretty helpful, and I'm standing by that. Thank you, James Nick Wheeler. But first and foremost, shout out to Mudwater. Our amazing sponsors. Did you guys hear that little throat gurgle? Those are hard to cut out. I keep everything in, baby. I'm not afraid. Mudwater is our amazing sponsors for a couple months, and we've been working together. I am so excited to be an ambassador for them because I actually use it. I actually enjoy it. It is something I have put into my morning routine for a couple years now, and every now and then, Mudwater and I partner up and find cool ways to create some content and give you guys a little bit of some mud to bring home as well. You can do that. You can get 15% off your entire order at mudwater.com using promo code Jessie Mae Mud. Now go to mudwater.com/Jessie Mae, put in the promo code Jessie Mae Mud, and you can get 15% off your entire order. That's mudwter.com/Jessie Mae and use code Jessie Mae Mud to get 15% off your entire order. I highly recommend, like I've said, the creamer. The powder creamer is the bomb. I highly recommend the frother because that really mixes it up. And anybody who sort of uses powdery drinks, the frother is just very useful. I use it in other cocktails as well. So check it out. Shout out to Mudwater. Thank you for keeping me alert without the jitters and the panic attacks. It's like healthy alertness with some adaptogens in it. You don't know what an adaptogen is? Google that shit. But it is mushrooms, reishi, changa, ashwagandha. There's also lion's mane in it. All of those have very, very beneficial effects. I have noticed the effects myself, and I stand by it. It's delicious. So shout out to them. Thank you so much. Also, I may be moving my Facebook page to a different platform. I may be moving to a different platform with my live broadcast that I do with Weeds Day Live, with a lot of the things that I'm putting out on Instagram. So stay tuned for that conversation. But in the meantime, please check out my YouTube page, youtube.com/Jessie Mae Peluso. Like and subscribe. Let's get me to 10,000 subs. I want 10,000 subs by April Fools. You think we can do it? Tell a friend to tell a friend to check me out. Let them know how fucking funny and motivational and actually really helpful that I am. I'm basically like a daily vitamin for you in the form of a voice. You're welcome. I'm your new best friend. Tell your best friend about me and subscribe to the podcast, subscribe to the YouTube page. And I appreciate all of you guys, all of your support. Like I said, I will be filling you in on all of the drama that I have dealt with the past few days. I am eternally grateful to my assistant, Deb De La Roses. You guys all know Debbie De La Roses. She has been my right-hand chick through all of this, so I appreciate her support. And I also joke that she better not Selena me. You guys remember what happened with Selena's assistant? Yolanda Salvador, she killed that bitch. And Debbie didn't even know what that meant because she hadn't watched Selena. Now she knows. Anything for Salinas. I truly appreciate you guys. If my voice sounds like I'm exhausted, it's because it's been a very trying couple days. I am not complaining. I am a perseverance. I am a persevering individual and a strong bitch. So that's not to say I didn't cry at the Spectrum Cable store yesterday, which I did when the woman asked how I was and I fucking lost it. We'll get into that next week. This week is all about sex and loss and your sexual expression. I'm so excited to have this guest back. He is truly a unique and progressive therapist. He is a licensed clinical social worker. He is a licensed sexologist. He also has books out. He's an author. He's an author of two books, Sex Outside the Lines, Authentic Sexuality in a Sexually Dysfunctional Culture. Hello, pick that one up. And also the author of Rebel Love, Break the Rules, Destroy Toxic Habits, and Have the Best Sex of Your Life. Who out there doesn't want to have that shit? He is also the director of clinical education for the Sexual Health Alliance and hosts the relaunched iconic Loveline nightly radio show. Please welcome my next guest, Dr. D. Aww.
Sharp Tongue Podcast. Beep, 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 beep.
You're listening to the Sharp Tongue Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Mae Peluso.
It's a personal
look. Well, it's not really a look because it's a podcast. I'm already fucking this up.
This is kind of like a verbal comedy diary, a deep look into the crevices of my mind.
It's going to get dirty.
You might cry. You'll probably laugh. Hopefully you'll laugh. The whole point is for you to laugh, but you also might cry.
I talk about my family. I talk about farts. I talk about love, loss, comedy, how hard it is to make it in this biz. I'm a fucking professional.
Each week it's something different. Sometimes I have a guest host. Sometimes it's going to be a movie companion episode. Sometimes I just ramble about the bullshit I dealt with the week before. You never know what you're going to get. It's raw, uncut, and funny. It's me.
Hey, everybody. What's going on? This is a special Dr. Peluso episode. Now, you guys know I'm not a real doctor, so don't try and sue me. It's all in fun. I have friends who are real doctors. That's what this whole episode is about. But I did buy this thingy off of... I got this off of Amazon. So am I a real doctor? You be the judge. But speaking of real doctor, we do have a real doctor. He has a licensed clinical social worker. He's a sexologist. He has written two books. He's been on all the podcasts. He also has a very informative and also pro mental health live show. I think he's still doing it. He was doing it on the weekdays through radio. What was it called? Oh, I'm terrible, terrible. Let me just pull him in. Dr. Donahue. Are you still doing the radio at night?
Basically, you're like, hey, welcome to my show. Do your own intro.
Yeah, please do. Are you still doing the live?
Well, so what's interesting is, so I do a nightly radio show called Loveline, and that's in 36 cities. Also, you know, it's podcasted, but at the beginning of the pandemic, radio.com,
who
owns a bunch of radio stations across country, asked me to start doing a live stream show because of the pandemic, just to have guests on and talk about, you know, self-care, mental health, and had you on, and
that's
you
right.
Literally gave me one of my favorite sound bites, and I post it often.
What was the sound?
Well, there I was, you know, in my, you know, really tight dress shirt, showing off my professionalism, talking to you about something serious.
Thank God.
Out of nowhere emerges a cocktail, and you just start slugging that bad boy, and I lost it.
Let me tell you, I have had to exercise much restraint during the quarantine. That was not one particular day. You know, it's like, you know, I'm going to have a cocktail. I am going to just sit here in all my professional glory and have a little bit of tequila.
We're doing the best we can.
We are. You look amazing, by the way.
Really? Oh, yeah. Man, it's been a rough week. I got the first vaccine and I've been having a really strange response. And I'm not in any way trying to sway anyone from not getting it. It's worth it. I'm a public health professional. We need to get vaccinated. But I'm very sensitive to medications. And the first one was supposed to be very simple. And I got it now 3 days ago. And I'm still having some headaches, arm pain, and some exhaustion.
Does that scare you? I mean, you are a doctor. So, I mean, you obviously, even though your profession isn't necessarily like internal medicine.
That's right.
You know, you probably know too much for your own good.
Yeah, I do. And what I also know is that the second one is going to have far severe, you know, the severe implications are going to be far beyond what I've had from the first. And so I'm definitely going to take a couple days off after.
So did you, now I haven't gotten it yet. The vaccine. Are you concerned at all about lasting effects with it?
Oh, that's a really good question. Well, it really depends on the variants. We're kind of looking at the research and seeing where that's going to land. Right now, I think today they were talking about, it wasn't the Pfizer, so it was the Moderna vaccine that might possibly protect us against some of the new variants. But it's going to really depend. You know, we're watching Texas wide open, right? No mask necessary. Everything's
South
open,
Carolina.
Full capacity. South Carolina, Florida, God bless them, has literally not participated in the pandemic thus far at all. So everyone's kind of helping us get there. It's going to be an interesting journey.
But of all places like to completely open up and maybe in turn self-eradicate, Florida.
Yo, I'm not stepping into that one. That was all you, but I appreciate where you're going with that one. Certain places maybe don't offer as much as other places.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I sent you a message because I've been doing this grief survival guide miniseries, and an interesting cross junction came up because obviously through quarantine there wasn't much. I haven't had sex in a rather long time, which is fine. I'm not complaining. I'm just stating, but I realized that either the quarantine situation or maybe something with grief, my libido is, it's like low libido. It's like no libido. And I thought of you, I was like, well, first of all, I wanted to have you back on because you're a requested person for the podcast. And also you're a real doctor. So it's nice to speak to one. But also I was wondering specifically about you. Have you crossed that in your professional life where sex and loss have this crossroads and sort of exist in this realm where people don't even consider that could be a weird situation?
Yeah. Well, I just want to start off by just, you know, empathizing with what you're going through. You know, loss and loss of a parent are some of the more profound things that we'll go through as, you know, humans. And grief and loss is something that changes us.
Yeah.
And it's not something that's healed or resolved. It's something that we kind of carry with us, and it becomes a companion on our journey for the rest of our lives. And that can have some beneficial outcomes and also some deficits. And I lost my father out of the blue about 3 years ago. And I'm really thankful that I did, only in that it helped me have a deeper, more powerful understanding of what that level of loss can feel like. And so it really helped inform my clinical work. So, you know, just sending you extra care and love, you know, understanding what some of that can be like. But, you know, the psyche is a really interesting thing. It's very fragile, and it is definitely impacted by anything that happens in our lives. And like I said, loss and the loss of some people in our lives, or even the loss of maybe an identity that we had, which can be tied to the loss of our career or other factors, is absolutely going to impact our sex drive. You know, sex is important. But in certain times in our lives, that's not where our energy and focus should go. And our psyche has a really powerful intelligence to it. And it lets us know where we need to be. And right now, your psyche and your body's telling you, you don't need to be putting your time and energy into sexuality and looking for a mate and pair bonding. You need to be focusing on where you are and healing and connecting to other, reinforcing and rejuvenating sources in your life.
And is that something, this may be a dumb question, but I just ask it because I feel like there are men out there who might think it. Is this something that is, you find more in like a female brain, or is this something that maybe men struggle with as well? Because even though society, and this is why I love having you on, because you break all the norms and the stigma, but coming from, if you allow it, just a traditional conversation of society making it so men are pounding their emotions down, do you find that men may struggle with this idea with grief and sex because they feel like maybe there's something wrong with them further because they're supposed to be these, you know, crazy fuck demons.
Yeah, yeah, and well said. that was a clinical term, fuck demon. You've definitely been reading the literature.
I'm reading the literature. I don't know where you got your schooling. I went to Amazon University.
God bless it. There's so much in what you just said. I think that's actually really important. Yes. People that are males in our culture are definitely socialized to have some anxiety and aversion to feeling anything deeply or fully, but also to expressing it publicly, right? But then we also have, can you hear that sound?
No, is
that
bad? I just hear your heart beating.
Okay.
Because I'm a doctor.
And you have a stethoscope. That's what that's called.
That's what it's called.
That thing is on your neck is, yes.
Thank you.
But being a man in our culture, like I said, yeah, you're forced to not only ignore and suppress and minimize, but to stick with your wider topic, also in mourning, we're also shamed, all of us culturally, and not mourning publicly. We're told that it's something we should do quietly and privately at home. You know, the minute someone cries about anything, what do? We try to actually shut it down. We hand them a tissue. We pat them on the back. We tell them it's okay. All of that are acts of actually telling them to stop.
That's interesting.
Yes. We don't do the opposite, which is more of that. This is safe. Keep going. This is good. We do the opposite.
Yes, so, we always do. We try to like pacify, but the pacification is shutting it down.
That's right. Further shaming, further denying, further minimizing, saying, pull together, keep going. And I think that that's also, we live in a capitalist culture, which just really means we are so obsessed with efficiency and productivity.
Yes.
And we're like, get back to work, get together, you know, get the kids breakfast. And it's like, whoa, we don't have morning rituals. And that's to our detriment. And that's why people get very confused. And we have big terms like, you know, delayed mourning, complicated grieving, all these words that just imply I haven't been allowed to go through the natural process I need to go through. And yes, it's gendered. I think it's harder on men to show anything that's weakness or softness.
It makes it difficult in relationships.
Of course.
You know, that's one of the things I've definitely come across. Obviously, you know, identifying as a heterosexual female with heterosexual men in my past, there's always that, like, not so much me trying to pull emotions out of them, but we come to a head in any sort of difficult scenario that might be heightened by grief. Yes. Or heightened by them experiencing some sexual inadequacies. And then we come to this head because they don't have the tools or feel the shame surrounding the emotions that they don't want to publicize.
This is such a therapy answer, but that which you are struggling most with, or that which you're leaning away from avoiding, is actually what you need to do more of. Mm. And so the work is always about leaning in and doing more, sitting with, and we culturally need that for everyone, but especially people that are male. So I work with men that are struggling to be a good father or a good partner. And part of that work is them having that emotional access and availability, which they've been shamed for and shamed themselves for so long. And that's where loss can be a gift if they choose to use it as such, because that is a moment where they can actually practice allowing emotional expression if they choose.
And that's a good way and word to use, the choice. Because I think people allow the limitation society puts on us to make the decisions for us and make us feel that we only have a limited amount of decisions to make. And we don't realize that we can pivot and become deeper and more expressive. I remember something specifically that I don't think I've ever shared on my podcast. I'm very, very candid, as you know, and my listeners know. I was losing, I had lost my father in 2018. And, you know, as someone who's experienced loss, the grief emotions and emotions surrounding grief, there's no schedule. You're on their schedule and they just show up. So I was having one of these moments where I was feeling that visceral loss and I was crying and huddled in a fetal position. And my boyfriend walks over to me. My boyfriend at the time comes over and just kind of like leans over and looks at me and then kind of like does a side to side and then walks away and leaves me crying. If that's not a perfect depiction of communication, emotion, and everything else of a breakdown, I don't know what is.
Yes, the poor guy was confused, didn't know what to do, didn't know what he was able to do, was struggling to lean in, lean away, and just got flustered and ran.
It was like,
I'm out. And you know what's funny? Here's the wild thing. What you most needed was actually the most simple, basic thing. You just needed him to be there. He didn't need to say anything. He didn't need to make it better. He just needed to give his presence.
Yes. That's exactly, like, even if he had, if I felt a hand on me, I like just something. And then like him leaving made me cry even more.
That's right. It's a double abandonment, right? You're already dealing with the loss of this figure and then you have his loss. And that's so sad to me. But, you know, your boyfriend was doing the best he could. That wasn't his lack of care. It was a lack of an ability he had. And we need to learn those things. And look, I will see women. And this isn't a critique on women, so I want everyone to kind of individualize this, but I will see the same people that are asking their partners to be more emotionally available. I'll also see them still shaming that at other times. You know, the same person that says in my office when I'm doing couples or marital therapy, I want my husband to be more expressive, is the same person that then says like, oh, I heard a scary noise downstairs, be the tough man and go down and figure out what it is. It's like, we can't have it every way.
No, and it's so castrating. I feel like I've experienced that with friends and people in my life. Females want their men to be a certain way, more expressive, but then they emasculate them whenever they say something. It's like, well, what? Do you not see how you're just chopping him off and you're totally emasculating him? He doesn't feel safe to talk to you.
Yeah, it's a double bind you put them in. They both want to be a man and the man of your dreams, but then also want to step outside the demands of that gender role and actually be able to be a full, total person.
It's fucking, it's such a thin, fine line for some women, because I understand wanting that, like, ferocious animal choking, I might die, but I feel safe sex. And pairing it with an emotionally available partner, it's a conundrum, because let me say this.
Yeah. This is why I'm a big proponent, and I don't believe enough people in my field are talking about this. So my field is general psychology. My field is also that I'm a certified sex therapist, right? So I walk both lines, and we really need to get away from gender roles and gender training and gender socialization, because it's not honest. Because another way that this comes up specifically in the sexual domain is when I work with a couple and the female saying, I want my man to ravage me. I want him to grab me, blah, blah, and everything you just said. And then we look over at this loving, gentle soul who's sitting there. And it's like, he does not have that in him. That is not who that man is. And your husband's a bottom. Like, we don't recognize that not every man is an aggressive top. And some men
can't
are bottom.
We have both.
You cannot have both. You can't have both fantasy and reality, you know?
Oh, so I'm basically going to have to get my sex from a Sasquatch and my love from a very well-rounded man.
You can be dominant sexually and also emotionally available. The example is more just to say that we have to get away from these assumptions that if someone's a male or a female, that we're going to assume or demand that they fulfill that role all the time in totality and not allow them to show up in ways that disappoint us because they're just trying to be their authentic self.
That's a valid point. I think it's a valid point. I feel like we're much more dynamic than the societal standards has allowed us to be. And we're all trying to fit in these boxes that are just a part of a capitalistic society.
100%.
I thought of something when you were speaking earlier. Was it difficult or useful when, you know, because you have, you know, you're registered and you're an actual doctor and you have gone to school and have learned all of these skills dealing with psychology and sex and all of that. But when dealing with something like loss, because you have a more understanding of emotions in the brain and sort of changes in life, was it harder or easier for you to go through a big loss like that?
Beautiful question. I want to believe that it gave me the confidence to just go through the process that I needed to go through. And I want to believe that it didn't, that I didn't trap myself in this idea of I need to show up a certain way. And even in a bigger sense, which is I think most people would use my training and credentialing against me and think you would get through it sooner, quicker, and faster because of the training you have. And my answer had always be, no, it's quite the opposite, actually. Because of the training, I'm letting myself soften into it. I'm letting myself be more publicly expressive. I'm not going to shame it. But yet people try to shame me with my own training. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, train shaming?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I said on my radio show, and I got a lot of responses to this. I said, this was last year. I said, my goal this year is to cry more and to cry more publicly. Because as a man in our culture, that's a really fucking radical act and very healing for me and healing for other people. Because you see a man cry in public, people stop.
Oh, they stop.
Stare, and they're uncomfortable. And it's fascinating to watch.
That's really strange because I have said that to myself this past year, and I didn't even know that that's something that you were working on.
Yes.
But even as a woman, because of how society is, crying in public is you just don't do that. It's taboo. Like, nobody wants to see anyone crying in public. Do that shit at home. Like, that's the way society makes us feel. And I myself, as open as I am, still allow myself to feel those little shame particles seeping into my being and fucking up my flow. So that's interesting that I also thought that. I was like, you know, I'm going to be okay crying, letting it out, and not feeling like I need to hide it.
Yes.
Wherever I am, wherever those emotions are. And I think about this one woman when I was living in New York City years ago. And, you know, New York, you could literally kill somebody in the middle of the street. And
God bless New York. You can do it all there.
You can do anything.
You can poop on the subway openly.
It's
your toilet.
And I've done it a few times.
I believe it.
Yeah. But it was like traffic, you know, rush hour. And I'll never forget the image of this woman holding onto the pole. No glasses, no hat, nothing covering her face. Bawling her eyes out. And just crying. She was not holding back whatsoever. And I was so moved by it. And I think about it often. And I think about her when I'm emotional in public. And I always wondered, like, what she could have been going through a million things. But the strength, like you're talking about, to be vulnerable and to not feel shame about feeling. What else are we doing all day long? We're feeling.
Yes.
The fucking moment we wake up, we have a feeling.
That's right.
And that feeling, everything carries has a feeling tied to it.
Everything has a feeling, every thought, every experience, eating a food. But go even bigger. Not only are we talking about the shame around public expression of emotions and specifically loss and crying, we also have a culture where we are all about toxic positivity. Think on the bright side. What's the silver lining? It'll be better tomorrow. We can't even hold the reality of depression, sadness, disappointment, and all that is okay. Like, I wrote a big article on how toxic positivity is, where it's such a denial and it's such an attempt to repress. It's like, let people feel everything. Like, let us be sad by something.
That's
let us be disappointed. Let us be angry. Like, we're afraid of anger. They're like, think positively. And it's like, no. There's a whole wellness industry that's building steam and making so much money off of, you know, do a daily gratitude list. And I'm not knocking that. There's a place for that. But like, maybe your day sucked. And I want people to sit in the fact today sucked.
Yeah.
And it's okay that it sucked. I don't need to make any meaning out of it. And tomorrow doesn't need to be better. Tomorrow might suck too.
Make a daily attitude list.
That's right. That'd be far better, because when we deny our shadow side and the dark parts, that doesn't make that thing go away. That just means it's operating on us and we're living and acting it out. We're just not aware of ourselves. And if you want to go even more relational with it, the scariest person on the planet is someone who doesn't know what their work is as a person. I make it my job to have every client in my practice know what they're working on so that I know they are working on something. But if I say to someone, what do you need to work on to be a better partner, a better person? And they go, I don't know. Wrap police tape around that person because they're a danger.
Wrap police.
Right?
Get out that crime tape around
them. Checkup. Yeah.
I just got done recording an episode and talking about how my disposition is very positive, but I also allow my shadow side, which I love that term. I've heard it before, but I love that you mentioned that because I have forgotten how to access the description of it. The shadow side. I allow my shadow side time. And I think because I do stand up, because I'm, you know, in the arts and all of that and talk on a podcast, it's allowed to shine. The shadow's allowed to shine. But my disposition, I've always called myself like an eternal optimist. That's just how I feel. Like when I wake up, I'm generally on the bright side. But with that comes this expectation of people around me that is just, you know, I'm always happy, or I, you know, just choose to ignore the sadness and the darkness. So it's also a strange relationship when you are a certain way.
Yes. And I like what you're saying.
To manage the expectations.
And thank you for balancing that, because yeah, it's not to say that everyone has to live 50-50. And you're right. Some people have a characterological style or personality style that just tends to lend itself to either being in a more positive mood, or they've had a easier life, or they just lean toward, and that's great. Like, enjoy that. You know, I tend to run very happy as well. I tend to be one of those people where they say, oh, you tend to laugh a lot. And instead of going to frustration, you'll make a joke of it. You know, what I love about comedians is humor is a higher level coping mechanism. We should yep. make a joke if we can. It can soften arguments. It's good for couples to use it lovingly. And I tend to be that person where if it's shitty weather out, my honest thought is I can't wait to wear my jacket that I never get to wear in California. It's just too hot. Like I tend to skew that way. Like it'll be okay. Yeah. And I don't want to fake darkness, but I also am working on being willing to say I'm really sad today, or acknowledging the gnarly parts of myself so that they're not running in my unconscious and I'm acting it out on others without knowing. I know what I need to do to be a good person. I know what I need to do to be a better son. I know what I need to do to be a better sex partner or romance partner. That's more what I want people to take away from that comment about the shadow, is not that you're not allowed to be happy or find the positive, but also know what your darkness is so that you can call yourself out when you're acting it out.
Yeah, that's so vital for people.
Yes.
And to that point, I have said for myself, and just from what I've experienced from stand-up, you know, material can be a very triggering thing. Things that you mention on stage. I talk about a lot of dark stuff. I talk about my whole shadow self. That's my material. I talk about rape. I talk about emotional abuse and, you know, the restraining order I had to get on somebody, and death. All of these things can be very triggering for people, and to the effect of people coming up to me afterwards, specifically when I do jokes about rape, because that was my introduction into sex. That was my first time I ever had sex. So it's a very interesting perspective. I've had women come up to me after shows where I've talked about rape and tell me that I shouldn't, to which I have said, and I would love your opinion, mm-hmm. that I empathize with them because I am also someone who has gone through that. And in a very understanding tone, I also say, I'm not responsible for your healing. And your process of healing is different than mine. And that is my process of healing. So where I wouldn't chop you down for how you have to do it, I understand that hearing it may be triggering, but I'm not responsible for your healing. Is that something that is bad to say? Is there a better way to tell somebody or express to someone that whatever they need to do to heal isn't on my shoulders?
Yeah. I love this topic because I dated a comedian for a little while, and it was really interesting to get to have these kinds
what?
Of...
I didn't know that there was an opportunity. Can I put in an application?
I'm not currently accepting applications.
Okay. Let me know when that opens up.
And it was interesting to spend time around a lot of comedians because, again, I really value humor. I think it takes a lot of wit and intelligence to be a good comedian, you know, and I think you're phenomenal as a comedian. I've heard your work. I think you're great. And I think it's really beautiful that you pull from your own experience. And there's a lot of different ways to healing and a lot of different routes to healing. You know, for instance, rough example, and then I'll get more specific to you. I was on a call right before ours, and I was giving a quote to a journalist writing an article on the positive and therapeutic uses of porn, which some people are shocked Ooh. That could even be a thing. And I was saying, you know, when I work with people that are non-normatively bodied, right? People that might be larger bodied or disabled or whatever it might be. I said, you know, one of the ways that we use porn to help them heal is to see their body, their specific body, which culture has traditionally said isn't desirable, to see it desired, to see it getting pleasure and giving pleasure. And I said, it's important for us to find whatever route we need to heal. And for you, talking publicly and taking the power back and you using your story in service of something that makes you feel empowered is your process. It doesn't sound like you're mocking rape victims. No. That would be a different scenario.
That's a different set.
That's the second hour.
That's the B side to the special.
But I think you have a right to your story, and I think you have a right to your process. And people get triggered. And you know what we need to understand is a trigger isn't for us to say to the person who triggered us, don't do that. A trigger is for us to learn where our work is, where we need more healing, right? Mm-hmm. And so if someone's triggered, I want their first response to be, I have work to do there. Why? I have to heal that area. And so I'd want your fans who get triggered by some of your jokes to say, what do I need to learn about myself and where my work is around that? Because that's my soft spot, my wound that I need to heal. It's not about Jessie. She's holding up a mirror, right, helping me see where I need to work.
I'm so glad that you said that. And I hope that women out there who are listening, who have been through, you know, similar situations or their own individual trauma surrounding rape, understand that I am not your guru, first of all, to quote Mr. Tony Robbins. But secondly, I'm only here to, I want to help the healing.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to exploit my experience to make it shocking.
Right.
So that it's a headline. That's not what I'm here for. So I'm really appreciate you sharing your expertise and explaining that from somebody who's actually a doctor.
To rape someone is something that person who raped should have a lot of shame about. And I don't want the victims to carry the rapist's shame, right? And it's a topic we need to talk more about. And I want everyone to take all the energy around what's in our culture right now with Me Too and sexual assault and put that shame back on the perpetrators. And in our culture, 97% of rapes and sexual assaults are at the hands of people that are male and male identified. So let's use all this energy to tell men to stop raping. Rape is a male issue because men rape. It's not a female issue. They're the victims. Women should not have to ask to not be raped. And so it's like, we need to take all that energy and say, yo, men, stop raping. Men, hold each other accountable. Tell your friends that those jokes aren't funny. And to talk negatively about women in a certain way also aren't funny. And to objectify women is not funny. Like, it's a male issue, and I want men to step up. That's where that conversation, yep, should really go. That's where the work is. Not a human being like you who's trying to work through and empower themselves and tell their story.
I just love the idea of women going out and asking people, can you guys just stop raping us? That would be great.
It's so funny
to think of.
It's so ill because I was looking at this meme that looked at what universities are giving out to talk about anti-rape culture. And again, it's all responsibility on the woman. You know, travel with your friends, don't drink a drink that someone gives you. And it's like, all of it was responsibility on the victim. And it was like, dear God, how about it starts with, hey dudes, don't rape. Hey dudes, hold your friends accountable. Hey guys, if you see your friend putting something in someone's drink, tell them to fucking stop.
I know, even the non-rape is our responsibility.
Yeah. It was crazy though. It was like, girls, travel in pairs. Girls, keep an eye on your friends. Girls, don't drink a drink that someone gives you. What?
I mean, so what? So just don't be a girl.
That's right. That's pretty much what it is.
You just don't want me to be a girl. Okay, yeah. Cool. So not only do I need to go out, get an education, take care of whatever kid I have or responsibilities I have, it's also my responsibility to not get myself raped.
That's right.
Cool. Yep. Ridiculous.
It really is. It's
sad. You're giving me so much fodder for ideas to put into the rape jokes. I do my Dr. Peluso on Mondays on my on Instagram, and a majority of the questions I get are relationship based, but I sometimes get some doozies. I also put up a question for people for you specifically. Do you feel comfortable answering some questions from the fans?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay, so let's see. All random stuff. Okay, and I'm just going to show you the type of random stuff we get. Okay. Just to level out the playing field. At Cheetown 702 says, has that thing been munched on lately? And
Am I what thing? Your face? Like what?
I think my vagina. I think he's talking about
down.
My vagina.
I'm sorry. I looked like you're pointing to your cheek.
I'm sorry. I did, but I should have been like, yeah. I went like this and
yeah,
then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Chi-town.
He's
no?
asking the deep, important questions.
Yes. And then put this emoji. If that's what you look like when you munch, the answer is no.
No. Oh, bless.
Okay, so this might be a good combo, but I see you're the professional doctor. I'm the fake yes. doctor. Right. So you guys can choose which advice you want to adhere.
God.
Nate's Open Gates says, the girl I'm dating, one below dating, asked me to do a bachelor series of dates with and then pick the winner. I'll let you know how this small series goes. So I guess...
Is that a question?
I don't know if he understands how to form a question. I'm going to read between the lines. And I guess basically the girl he's dating asked him to go on like test dates to see if she wants to date him. That's hey, how
that's
that
legit.
Sounds.
That's legit.
I mean, there's so much pressure. Don't you think when you, in the dating world, obviously everything's different now, but with online and social media, like to go on a real date, I feel like there's more, that's more difficult than just talking on our phones. So maybe this girl needs some time and just wants to take her time.
I mean, I feel like I'm already swooping in with the annoying therapy answer.
Do it. Because they listen to my bullshit every week.
Okay, good. I'll give it some
levity. Do the therapy thing.
I think that in our culture, we actually, and I appreciate that some people are playing games, manipulating fuckboys and all that. Stepping outside of that, we don't date. People tend to relationship. And dating is about exploring if I'm compatible enough with this person to get into a relationship with them. But people expect a lot right from the door. And then they end up in my office when they realize that because you think someone's hot isn't enough to build a relationship on. You actually have to assess compatibility, sexually compatibility, social compatibility, physical, intellectual. And I want people to slow down. And I would love people to always be dating multiple people to really see who's a good fit. And then after that, ask one of them if they want to move forward into a relationship. But I work with some people that expect way too much too soon and jump right in. And it's like, we should all be exploring, taking more time. It's not enough to think someone's hot or to have good sex. Compatibility takes time because chemistry is right there in the front. Chemistry is, do I want you? Am I turned on by you? It's lust. But compatibility takes time. And compatibility is actually best shown in times of conflict. What happens when our personalities come together? And conflict really helps us see what kind of sustainability and health we can have. How do we manage difficult times? So early on's great. Enjoy that. But you need to give it time to really see.
I think that's really important for people to listen to. Ladies, specifically, I know you girls. I see the analytics. I know who's listening to this podcast. You bitches are rushing into shit.
That's right.
See, now Dr. D will deliver it how he delivers it because he's a doctor and he could actually get sued. Me, I'm not a real doctor. So don't sue me.
I love all the sue anxiety. What kind of people are listening to your show? Everyone's so litigious. It's so wild. But yeah, everyone's got to slow down a little bit. I work sadly with a lot of couples that, you know, they think that because the chemistry is there, that all's well, and they jump in and they even buy a house, get married, have kids. And then they come to me to fix compatibility. And it's like, you were supposed to have been assessing this. Wow, you guys actually have a lot of high conflict. Wow, and your personalities come together. It's a mess. You are not meant to have done more than just had a couple sexual experiences. Like, you don't have what it really takes.
And when that happens, if, you know, it comes to that point, obviously chemistry is something that's there or not.
That's
now
right.
Compatibility, is that something you can sort of cater and create to make it fit? Or is that something that is kind of like chemistry?
If they're up for the work, not everyone's able or willing to. Are you able to work on being more assertive and less aggressive? Are you working on managing your jealousy so that you're not trying to control and dominate your partner all the time? Like, it depends. I work with some people that do amazing transformative things and they move into the kind of person their partner needs, and others it's years and years and years of turmoil and conflict. And it's like, let me say it like this. Relationships take some work, but they shouldn't take a lot of work. They shouldn't be
really good
that
point.
Much work. And I see people that are like, oh, relationships take work. And I'm like, nah, not that much. And you're using that to rationalize staying in something toxic. Get out.
I mean, say that part twice. You guys might want to put that shit on repeat and have that be your ringtone. This is a good question. I think you will enjoy. Lex Delaney, who is a longtime fan, first time single in 8 or 9 years, scared but excited, hard to stop talking to my ex though.
Put words to that face. Why? Are you saying you've been there? Are you saying I see you? What are you saying?
I'll tell you. See, for me, I'm just going to guess that you have a more open perspective about this. I don't see the need to be best friends with your ex, especially right after you break up. I don't see the necessity. To me, it feels a little codependent. It feels also slightly toxic to the healing process. And it feels like if a shirt doesn't fit, you return it to Marshall's. You don't like go back and put it back on and try and make it fit. It doesn't fucking fit. There's a hole in it and there's a stain on the back. Like, let's put the shirt back in the store and let somebody else pick it up and clean it and fix it.
Yeah. Well, look, said lovingly, that's a common answer, and that comes from our anxiety and the lower parts of ourselves. Because here's the thing, when you go through a breakup, yes, we often do need time away and time apart, right? Because when we form a true attached relationship, and what attached means is a long intellectual academic concept, but what it basically means is we've really wired. When you get into a truly connected, deep relationship, your nervous system and your brains wire, and you do impact each other, and you do feel a sense of safety and calmness when they're around, and you might feel anxiety when they're not. And a breakup, if you've truly attached and formed a deep relationship, is a severing of that. And that's why there's so much pain. Mm. It should be painful. Now, we will often physically separate, but we will sometimes keep ourselves still attached psychologically by creeping on their social media, talking nonstop to our friends about them, and that doesn't allow us to separate fully. So I agree with you on that level. However, I do like the idea of at some point, once that's settled down, to still have our exes in our lives, to engage in all the other things about them that we did enjoy. And I'm friends with all of my exes because just because sex and romance wasn't what we were compatible around, I still enjoy them on all the other levels that we connected around. And I still get to and should have that in my life. And whoever I date, like the person I'm dating now, has to understand that and be adult enough to know that if you trust me and I trust you, I can be friends with anybody. And I only want people to be in relationships with people they trust. And I have all my exes in my life because they're amazing people that I still have a lot of deep love for. We just weren't meant to be romantic long-term partners. And so we took time apart and we healed. Some of them I just text every now and then, happy birthday. Others I'll meet sometimes for coffee because we still work on projects together. And others I talk to every single day and are some of my best friends.
Well, that's why you're a better person than me.
All that just to model that it is possible if you're willing to do the work. Because here's the thing, like, ideally, if we date as adults, our lives just keep getting bigger and more amazing people get brought in. Dating shouldn't be our life shrinking down. And most people date,
yes,
and they push everything anxious out and they're all jealous and the world just gets so small and toxic.
That is a beautiful way to look at it. It is a great way to grow and add color to your life. I've recently, through doing work, I joke a lot, but I recently do it during self-work, and you know, I've been going to therapy for years, and I always read and try to find ways to evolve. I have kept relationships. One of my first boyfriends, we're still very close. We talk to each other, and I actually just reconnected with an older boyfriend who has a wife and a kid, and I'm genuinely happy that I don't have to put up with this shit anymore. Let me just see this. No, I'm just kidding. I really am happy for him. This is an interesting question because I feel like with what's going on in society in the time right now with the quarantine, that maybe people are overthinking and there's some anxiety driving their relationships. Get it? Like the ship. Do you drive a ship?
I don't know what you call a ship.
You see? Yeah. Okay. Got it. Port Maine. I keep getting ghosted by dates when they realize how much weed I smoke. Do I just start lying about it? First of all, the ghosting thing could be a scenario. Like maybe I think I'm in the mindset now with everything that's going on that people, their foundation has been rocked. A lot of them lost their jobs. Relationships have broken apart. Careers have ended because of the quarantine.
People have died from COVID.
People have died, that part as well. So people's worlds are shooken up. So when anytime somebody like doesn't get back to me or doesn't respond right away, I don't think about it anymore. So maybe this person hasn't considered that maybe you're not getting ghosted. Maybe people's lives are a little fucked up right now.
I love you for saying that, because that's actually a really mature perspective, that when something happens, we tend to make it about us, right? Versus saying what might be going on in their day as to why they didn't get back to me as soon as I needed, or what was going on in their day that they didn't text me happy birthday. Like, I want us to consider that first, right? What's going on in the context of their life? Because people are living a life, but we don't do that. It's like, you're not my friend because you didn't text me. Well, I'm sorry. Did you consider or ask what was going on for them? That's number one. Number two, too many people are getting beat up from dating and hookup culture. We do need a little more care and compassion. And I hold everyone I know in my personal life and my clinical practice accountable to. If you are not willing to send someone a "I'm not interested anymore" text, then you are not mature enough to be dating or having sex with people. Because it literally takes 5 seconds to write, "Hey, it was great hanging out. The chemistry just isn't there for me. I'm not interested in hanging out again. Like, all the best." It takes 2 seconds. And if you're not willing to do that, you are not safe or mature enough to date.
I mean,
because people are getting injured emotionally.
I really think that's, I think that is a vital thing to do. And it's being honest. And the other side of trailing people along is just fucking brutal and rude.
It's
to lead
mean,
somebody on?
It's injuring.
Rude.
I work with so many people that are so afraid of opening up and letting go because of people repeatedly breadcrumbing, orbiting, ghosting, all these obnoxious terms that have emerged out of dating app use. Like, I was making a list and there was like 7. There's like ghosting, then there's zombieing, which is when you ghost but then come back and do it again.
Oh, that's fucking genius.
Then there's like breadcrumbing, and then there's orbiting, which is when you piece out but still show up on their, looking at their story, so they see you're still creeping. Yep. Somehow, like, there's something called paper clipping, which I don't even remember, and it's like
paper clipping.
Horrible. Yeah, I don't even remember what that is, but all horrible behaviors. Yeah,
it is, because
people just won't be honest.
Right, exactly what I was gonna say. People just won't be honest. We've got some Dr. D specific questions here. I'm gonna kick off with my people here. Ivan Q84, is it okay to shave my butthole?
Is it okay? Yeah, sure, why not?
I guess maybe because he's a guy, he feels like it's not okay to shave his butthole.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to sometimes trim or shave certain areas because of bacteria, smell, it holds sweat. I don't want anyone to do it out of body shame. If you're someone who, as a boy or girl, has more body hair, I don't want anyone to do it out of shame. We need to learn more familiarity around that. But yeah, for some people, it's cleaner in terms of, like I said, bacteria or holding sweat. I wouldn't feel bad about it, if that makes sense to you.
I mean, that's a very responsible, respectful, and professional answer. I have started to laser my asshole, and okay, I'm just saying this is a completely candid situation. Yeah. Everybody knows most of my business on this podcast. And I did it because the hair was unruly.
Mm.
And as a woman, I had that thing. I was like, I can't have hair like this back here. I can't be a Sasquatch. I can't be like the missing link. And then as the girl was lasering my hair, and I was sitting there trying to make jokes because I was uncomfortable with the fact that she was lasering my hair and how hairy it was.
Yeah.
She was like, actually, all women have hair back there, and yours
okay,
isn't
pause
that bad.
There. Pause there. That's exactly the route I went when you first started. Is I was thinking, I'm so glad she's talking about this, because even though you were talking about it around the need to remove it, I still like that you're normalizing that it actually exists.
Oh, it exists. And it's like,
but for women in general, that that's not just a male bodied thing, that any, you know, women also have body hair.
Yes.
And let's just talk about that and acknowledge that, not have so much shame around that.
I'm going to give you a little, my last name, which will soon be yours when we wed. My last name is Peluso, and yes. Pel is hair and Uso is many.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
My last name means very hairy.
Okay. Wow.
So I think my butthole just took it a little too seriously.
Well, or it's just doing what it was meant to do, you know, like genetically. And because that's what's, you know, that's why that name came to be. And, you know, why do you hate your family?
Good point.
Why do you hate your family's heritage?
Solid. Well, that I'll have to book you for a real session to get into that.
Yeah. But I appreciate you talking about these things. Again, even though it's with humor, like, you're normalizing the existence. And that's important.
The existence of asshole hair, which, that's unlike right. Sasquatch, is real. Let's see. This is a good question. from a man. I love this. See, this is why I love having different guests on. Jordan Harder asks, how do you overcome sexual anxiety?
Oh, wow. My first answer is always have as much sex as possible. You know, sex is a developmental milestone. And somehow we magically think that we should delay it. Magically, at some point in your life when you need to have it, you're going to understand how and have confidence around it. And also we think that it's something we should reserve for committed relationship. No, don't do that. Sex promises nothing. Have sex only because you want to have it in the moment, knowing that it doesn't promise care or commitment. I also say to people, please don't think that delaying sex is a sign I'm interested in a relationship with someone, because at some point you do need to explore sexual compatibility. You can start there, you can end there, but at some point we do need to do that. Let's normalize that. It's okay to say I want both relationship commitment and I'm open to casual sex. You can do both at the same time. Sometimes people think I need one or the other, and if I'm being casual in my sex, that's telling the world I'm not looking for commitment. No, it leads to that often. And it's something we need to learn through practice. So I would say go have a lot of sex. Absolutely.
I think that's amazing. And it's totally, I'm getting comfortable with that idea too, you know, to out of this quarantine date a lot and have it not limit myself to whatever pretense I think I should fall under. And I can't wait. I'm going to toss a kitty cat around all the rooms.
Girl, you're going to get out there. But also let me throw this in there. And this is like another like hypertherapist answer, but be thoughtful about the kind of porn you watch, because traditional standard porn is not meant to be a sex education. And it is horrible of an educator because it reinforces what you expect your body to do. And, you know, real porn, the porn people watch, it doesn't show the failures. It doesn't show the aids that they're using, whether they're putting an injection in their penis or taking a pill to get hard and stay hard.
Dang.
It doesn't show their struggle to orgasm. It doesn't show all the slip ups. It doesn't show a discussion around safer sex practices and people's STD, STI status. So I always tell people, go watch body positive feminist porn, because feminist porn is going to be porn that doesn't just focus on what we call the male gaze, G-A-Z-E, what men want to see women do, right? Which is so orgasmically obsessed, penetration obsessed. It doesn't focus on the female's pleasure, how to pleasure a female.
You barely
watch
see her getting
porn.
Off.
That's right. Feminist porn is more about foreplay. It's everyone's pleasure. It shows some dialogue. It's a better tool to learn from.
There's some conversation. That's true.
Actual
they never
talk.
Even have sex. They just cry and watch a Netflix miniseries.
If Jesse, if you started producing your own porn, that's the kind of shit we would see.
We would go adopt a few dogs and buy a house in Idaho.
There it is. There it is. We would laser each other's buttholes. We would cook dinner. That's right.
One of my favorite porns that I've ever watched was massage porn, but I also think it falls under feminist porn. A, it was one guy, one woman. B, it was in this beautiful spa. She was being completely doted over. Yep. He actually gave her a real massage and, you know, both sides, the toes, the whole nine. And then it was all like foreplay based, like all around the kitty cat and up and down the kitty cat, in the kitty cat, the boobies.
But pause. Look at what the viewer of that would learn and normalize versus traditional porn, which is get it up, get it in, get off, and then you leave her laying there. And it's like, well, wait a minute, what?
Yeah excuse
totally.
Me. My and, L2 and, hurts.
And for most men, the only time they see other people having sex is in porn. So
that's
we have
a
nothing
really good
else
point.
To work off of. We've never seen the other side or what else can happen, and it's to our detriment.
And dudes listening to this, if you hear feminist porn and you're feeling triggered because you have an idea of what feminist is and you don't want to do it because you're all that feminist bullshit, it's porn.
That's
you
right.
might as well just watch it.
That's right.
And just open your mind. Get
It'll
used
make you
to
feel more
your
secure.
Mind.
It'll make you feel more secure in your body size, your body functioning, because it's real bodies doing what real bodies
yes.
do. Yes.
And I've been looking for this massage dude for a while. I'm like, where? My brother-in-law told me about spas. I know there's like happy ending places for men, but is
right.
there the equivalent for women?
There sure is.
What are they called?
Well, I mean, it's not legal,
heaven?
So I don't want to like recommend it on air per se, but
if
there
you could just
are
pin me and send me a location.
I can, and I can even imply that there are, how do I say, there's spas in every city. that are the more typical ones that friends might go to get massages or take a hot tub or whirlpool. And there are specific masseuses that work there that are happy to push the boundaries a little further upon consent. Yes.
I mean, come on, ladies, we have to drop our ideas of what is normal. I have a female friend
who once a month goes to see her favorite guy, and it is a to completion massage. Yes.
I mean, listen, I will stay in LA longer for that.
Yep. After a 90-minute rub down, it ends real happy.
With another 90-minute conversation, cuddle, cry, and snack.
They watch a Netflix show together.
We watch The Crown.
I'm recommending nothing illegal. I'm talking about consenting adults.
Yes. Please, you're going to give me that information afterwards. Okay. Do you have time for a couple more questions?
I sure do. Let's do it.
Okay. Mongoose says relax, says, it's quite the name, Tinder and dating apps. I am terrible at flirting and sexting. Any advice?
Yes. Stop trying. It's when we, you know, we often flirt and date with this idea that we need to be liked, and dating is about being known, not being liked. Right. And so stop thinking, what do they want me to say? What do they want me to wear? Where do I think they want me to take them? And actually live from your truth. If I go on a date with someone, we're going to go to the kinds of places I like to go, and I'm going to wear the things I like to wear, and I'm going to see if we're actually compatible. I'm not going to sell a dream. I'm going to date from my best, but I'm not going to people please. And a successful date or successful flirting is sometimes realizing through a true self showing up that we're not compatible. And that's actually success. So I'd say to him, stop trying and literally be yourself. Talk about who you are, what you are. Talk about your day. Don't try to please. Don't overthink it. But I'd also say, based on a lot of burnout that's happening on apps where people are so tired of just getting, hey, hi,
yes,
these non-starting one-word things, put a little effort in there, be a little thoughtful, and more importantly, be consistent. People aren't taking anyone seriously that's not consistent. So be honest, be yourself, don't try so hard, but add a little more than just a hi and be consistent.
I got to go change some of my messages then, because I definitely threw a hi out there.
No, we're burnt out on that.
And that's the other thing, ladies, just because you have a puss doesn't mean you don't have to try.
100%. And I say that to all the females in my practice that are single. You have to think outside of that. Like, you're getting in your own way. Not every guy's assertive. Men have also been beat up by this. Men are also burnt out. We guys are only going to try so hard to court someone. It's okay to be assertive. It's okay to show signs of interest. Another soundbite I love: interested people like signs of interest. If someone's interested, you will not turn them off by showing up with interest as well. When we like someone and we've left a great date, we only feel good when they text us right away. We don't feel good when they've waited to try to play it right, play it cool, or whatever it is. Yeah. So if they're interested, they'll like your signs of interest. And if not, it's good to know. So I always tell people, text as soon as you want. Be honest. I will text someone an hour after the date. That was really awesome. When can I see you again? What are you up to now? Like, be confident. And if they're interested, they'll value that and they'll show up to that. And if not, I want to know that.
Well, that's amazing. That brings me right to our next question by Andrew Alexander 87. So, doctor, are you single and would you consider taking Jesse on a date?
Aww, I'm not single.
He's not single.
I'm not single.
Stop.
But otherwise, yes. But I would say to them, it's so funny. Who is this person that's so invested in your romantic
life? He looks really cute, first of all. He's got like a beard. Andrew Alexander 87. Well, I'm going to guess he was born in 87.
Jesse, why don't you send him a little high?
I know, Andrew, you want to take me out on a date? I just need to do a quick background check and talk to your mom or dad. Maybe
I'm not, that's actually brother. Funny, but like these days, I feel like you should get referrals. You know,
yeah, if we need,
on a date, send me a few referrals, or not referrals, but what do you call them?
Like, a reference.
Reference, yes. Get some references.
100%. Some references for the dicks as well.
That's
like,
right,
there should be,
right,
you know, little conversation of women, like, this is how his dick is, it goes this way or that way, and
God,
when he comes,
stop,
he cries,
stop,
so just get
stop.
Ready for it. Okay, last question. I don't want to make you blush because I know you're totally in love with me. Jessica Spy. This is a really important question, and I'm glad that this is the one that we are going to end our questioning on. How do I make sex more enjoyable? I find it boring and more like a chore.
Wow. So assuming it's not due to her partners, let's just assume it's her somehow, right? Cause she can actually work on that. Again, I'll start by saying a lot of people are too focused on how they look and pleasing their partner. I tell everyone you're responsible for your orgasm and your pleasure. And so you have to ask and have the kind of sex you want. I work with so many people that are afraid to say, that actually doesn't feel good. Can you fuck me like this or touch me like this? Right? They'll even go into long-term relationships, never having said that. We're too obsessed with, staying quiet, staying still. Hot sex is where our bodies are moving and doing what they do. We are vocalizing and making sounds. We're letting body fluids exist. Like, we're just being honest. But I'd also say to her, really sit with yourself and ask yourself, what does turn you on? Because a lot of us haven't actually asked ourselves that.
That's true.
And move towards that. You have to be authentic. You know, good sex partners ask what turns us on. They don't assume. And I always say that to guys too. Like, you're actually a horrible sex partner if you say things like, I know what all girls like. Well, okay, no, you don't, because they're all different.
All girls are not created equal.
That's right.
Exactly.
And you need to actually have every sexual experience with the mindset, I'm a virgin again, because I've never had sex with this person. I have to figure out who they are, what they like, and what we co-create. Because every time I have sex with someone, it looks different, each different partner, because it's a different person. We create something different. And I'm in a different mood. And so I'm honest. I'm like, what do I feel like doing? What would I see? What would turn me on to see myself do to this person? And what would turn me on to see them do to me? And so you have to just really sit honestly with yourself.
Damn, dropping the knowledge. You guys should be paying for this shit.
Well, I also just quickly, I wrote two books, Rebel Love, Sex Outside the Lines, cover such topics.
I was just going to tell them.
No, my agent got so mad at me because he heard some of my interviews and he was like, you never plug your work.
This is your latest book?
That's my first book.
Oh, this one is?
That's the first one, yeah. And Rebel Love is the newest one, yeah.
Break the rules, destroy toxic habits, and have the best sex of your life. So, Jessica, you might want to get this. I will put the links in the description of the podcast. So if you guys want to check out his books, I'll put his website. And also, can they book you to talk to you?
Yes.
Yeah. They can book to talk
Absolutely.
To you. I guess the one last thing I want to talk to you about before we go is there a few words of advice? I know we've already sort of touched on it, but for people experiencing struggling with loss and sexuality and moving into that new space in their life when they're without somebody they love, navigating all those emotions, what's one of the most or a couple of the most important things for them to realize and consider?
Yeah, I would say the first one is to really be honest with where you're at and what your journey is. Don't try to be better than you're feeling. Don't try to be more pulled together than you are. Don't try to rush anything. That's going to just further complicate and traumatize and really derail the process. Like, really trust the intelligence of your mourning process, right? I'd also add to that, be around people that are willing to hold space for you because there's something about having community around us and having people witness and be a companion to that. And kind of like your example with your boyfriend, find people that will sit there with us and don't try to fix us or shut us down, but they'll sit there, you know, and that was what was really powerful for me when my dad died 3 years ago. Two of my best friends came over and I just found out, it was out of the blue. I wasn't in the space where I wanted to talk. And what was really stunning is they naturally knew what to do. Was two of my male best friends, which is what was really so stunning. And they both came over and they just sat there and they didn't say a thing. And they just sat with me and I just cried. And it was like really beautiful. They didn't want anything. They didn't try to tell me to be okay because it isn't okay. It becomes better, it becomes different, but it's never okay, you know? And for the rest of my life, and even till now, it gets triggered. I have times where something great happens in my career and I think, I got to tell my dad, and I'm reminded he's not here anymore, right? It still comes up. So be on your journey. It takes as long as it takes. Find community or friends that will sit with you and hold space. But I'd also say, give yourself the ability to also find some joy. That's not to deny what you're going through, right? You can still be sad and also say, I'm still going to go, I don't know, go have fun with a friend or go eat ice cream or watch a humorous movie. I can hold both. I can allow myself to laugh and find joy at the same time. I think that's important.
I think it's really important. And you just reminded me that I need to have a little bit of space for joy as well.
That's right.
You know, it's perfectly healthy to feel happiness and joy and also be going through the loss of someone you love. So even though I horribly introduced you, people know who you are because they love you and have requested you back for the podcast. But to reiterate where they can find you, listen to you, consume you, Please tell me.
Yes. Sex Outside the Lines and Rebel Love are my two books. I also host Loveline. It's a radio show in 36 cities. You can Google it, find it in your local city. I also have a clinical practice, and you can book sessions by going to drchrisdonahue.com. And yeah, that's it for now.
And then Chris will just let us know when his relationship ends, and then we'll start our journey.
There you go. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for making time. It was so good to talk to you and see your face. And I appreciate you so much.
Thanks. We'll talk soon.
Bye.
Bye.